You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good morning, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and welcome to the American Hour, broadcasting live from sunny, beautiful southern Florida right now. Don't know where you're listening to it from, or if you've downloaded this. I hope the weather's nice where you're at, and life is good, but life is definitely good here. Got a great guest coming on a little bit later in the show, Pastor Roger Angus, who recently wrote the book Bring America Back to Her Religious Roots. I'll give you his background a little bit later on, but he's got a great background and very knowledgeable on a lot of different subjects. He's got some good websites that put out a lot of good information, the kind of information that you don't get from the mainstream media. Boy, that's a real thing these days, isn't it? Trying to put information out that you're not going to get, not even from Fox News. It's a shame. It really is a shame. But now I want to remind people that Michael Cutler is going to be on the air tomorrow night, the same network broadcasting his show. And you don't want to miss that. With everything that's been going on, Michael has great insight into not just immigration, but border security. And that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about national security, where we have people that can get into this country and come and go at will when they're on a terrorist list. I mean, where is this breakdown occurring? Well, Michael's going to line that all out for you. We talked about some of that yesterday, but he'll go into depth, and he really is the expert on this stuff when it comes to border security, national security, and immigration. So I know you'll like his show tomorrow night, 7 p.m., same network. And we are going to talk about a variety of things today. I got some good stuff to go over, but I wanted to hit on something that we finished the show up with yesterday, and that is FAA and air travel and how we're being scammed that the FAA just doesn't have the money to, you know, it's got to furlough people because they had to cut $637 million from their budget. Very interesting, isn't it? $637 million from their budget. Sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but let's take a look at some of the numbers. Now, those of you that like to go to factcheck.org, I'm going to give you a little insight into factcheck.org and the kind of stuff that they put out that really isn't factual. That's the best way to put it. But here it is from factcheck.org, because we've got some different claims being made about the FAA and that it really didn't have to cut as much as it did cut. But let's go and delve into just a little bit of their information. A number of Republicans are using misleading numbers when they say the Federal Aviation Administration should cut consultants and travel before resorting to furloughs that are causing airport delays. For example, Representative Bill Schuster, who chairs the House Committee on Transportation Infrastructure, says the FAA spends nearly $500 million for consultants and $325 million in supplies and travel. But the FAA says it spends $21 million on consultants, and travel expenses are limited to operational travel, including for safety inspectors. Now, so here we've got a chairman of the House Committee on Transportation Infrastructure who knows the budgeting process and where money goes and how much of it goes to them. But factcheck.org is going to let the bureaucrats at the FAA tell us what they're really spending. So instead of going into the CBO, Congressional Budget Office data, or congressional records to see what the money is, factcheck.org just simply goes on the word of some unnamed FAA bureaucrat. So there's you think factcheck.org is doing fact-checking? They're not. But let me explain to tell you about what we talked about yesterday, that factcheck.org isn't saying if they were actually going to check facts. It's real simple. If you go to thenewamerican.com, that's where I got this, and they gathered information from various different sites, like from FreedomWorks in this case. Even the $637 million in cuts that is forcing the FAA to delay air travelers is fraudulent, according to Logan Albright, writing for FreedomWorks. The FAA, in other words, this administration, only requested a budget of $15.172 billion for fiscal year 2013. But Congress gave them well over $16 billion. Okay? So after the $600 million reduction, the amount they actually received, $15.999 billion, so virtually $16 billion. So they asked for 15.1, and they got 15.9. They got $800 million more than they asked for. And they're saying they have to cut? Well, what kind of dire straits would we be in if they only got what they asked for? Are they that stupid and incompetent there? And if you go back to 2003, where there was more air traffic being conducted, the FAA had less controllers than they have today. So what are they telling us? They've become less and less efficient over time? That they're incapable of handling the kind of air traffic that they used to handle? If you go up to Canada, Canada got smart. They started privatizing stuff like this. So NAV Canada is not a government agency. It's a private agency. NAV Canada took over in, I think, late 90s, like around 98, maybe 96. And since that time, air traffic has gone up 50% in Canada, and yet they have 25% less controllers than when they took over from the government. So traffic's up, and they have 25% less controllers. And they're not having any problems up there. There's no flight delays up there in Canada. They're not whining and complaining about sequester this and sequester that. So it's all a scam. Political posturing. This administration is being dishonest with the American people, lying to the American people. Oh, boy, what a surprise. And that's what's going on with the air travel. So I wanted to update you on that. Now, I've got some interesting sound bites today. One is from one of our very trustworthy. I guess the theme today ought to be trustworthiness. So factcheck.org isn't trustworthy. They lie or hide stuff. We've got the FAA that doesn't tell the truth either. And then we're going to move on to one of our Democrat senators who never tells the truth about, quite frankly, anything. And then we've got a well-known, I don't know if watched, but a well-known newscaster. I don't know if you can call him a newscaster. A well-known opinionated person on MSNBC. I think he's on MSNBC. Maybe he's on CNN. He's not on CNN. MSNBC. And we'll get to look at his I don't want to say, in this case, it's not so much trustworthiness, it's hypocrisy. It's much more of a case of hypocrisy with him. So we will get to that here in just a little bit, but I'm going to give you this first soundbite from one of our famous senators, and I want you to listen to the first part of it because he has trouble speaking. Yeah, I think there's something wrong with him. I think, I don't know if it's just age, maybe he's starting to get some dementia setting, and a little bit of trouble speaking. And then he makes a statement that is so ludicrous, so ridiculous, he doesn't even, look, we're to the point now where politicians will tell us the sky is green and that the ocean is red and down is up and up is down and black is white and white is black. And they'll just tell it to you as a matter of fact. You know, it's like, hey, as a matter of fact, everybody knows this. All the experts know this. Everybody knows. They just outright lie to us. So, first of all, see if you can figure out who this is. I know you'll be able to figure out who it is. He's one of the many Democrat senators that slobbers on himself when he speaks at the House of the Senate, or the floor of the Senate.
But they are doing everything they can to throw a monkey wrench into any form of government.
Let's talk about the Tea Party.
Local, whether it's state or federal government. That's what it's all about. And so anything they can do to throw a monkey wrench in the wheels of government, they're happy doing that. And I'm sorry to say my friend from Oklahoma is helping them. Maybe not directly, but indirectly. And that's wrong. Government is not inherently bad. Government is inherently good. That's why we have a constitution. Government is inherently good. Government is inherently good.
Wow. Where to begin? Oh, I know exactly where to begin. He says that government is not inherently bad, and that's why we have a constitution. because government's inherently good. The government didn't write the Constitution. We the people wrote the Constitution, and the purpose of the Constitution is to shackle the government. Why would we need to shackle an inherently good organization? In fact, if government was inherently good, we wouldn't need the Constitution. He doesn't even get it. This is government and Constitution 101, and Harry Reid, Dungy Harry Reid, as I think Rush calls him, Dingy Harry Reid, he doesn't get it. I mean, he clearly doesn't get it. Now, I've got some quotes a little bit later on I'm going to read from Thomas Jefferson that explains the exact opposite of what Harry Reid just said. So is Harry Reid smarter and knows more than Thomas Jefferson? I bet he hasn't even read one single book about Thomas Jefferson and all of the books that Thomas Jefferson read that detail the governments throughout history. I guarantee you Harry Reid hasn't read any of those books, not a one of them. But anyway, we've got our guest here. Let's bring the pastor on. I'm going to give a little bit of introduction to him. But first of all, Pastor Roger Angus, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very good. How are you doing, sir? I'm glad to be on your program.
Well, we're glad to have you, and we all know Patra and how good she is at getting people on different radio shows and helping get the correct word out there, the truth out there about what's going on in our government and our country. But just a little bit of your background. You were born and raised in Denver, Colorado, and I love Colorado. We vacationed there many, many times. Beautiful, beautiful state. Love Denver a lot as well. We don't actually stay in Denver. We fly in, and then we go up to Breckenridge. I'm sure you're familiar with Breckenridge.
That's a beautiful part of the country up there.
Oh, it's just wonderful. It really is. And I don't ski. My wife does, so we haven't been there for a skiing vacation. We just go in the summertime, and it's just wonderful. It's great for all kinds of outdoor activities. But it says here that you spent years studying the lives of the founders and the impact their faith, Christianity, had on the development of America and America's style of government. And you've got a radio show of your own. And you've got a website called RestoreFreeSpeech.org. And I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about your new book that just came out, Bring America Back. Tell us anything else you want to let the people know about. Any other website, social media, Facebook, Twitter, email, any of that kind of stuff. Anything that's coming up where you might be speaking. Tell us about your radio show and when that comes on. And just give it all to us.
Well, very good. I got my fingers in a whole lot of different pies. Like you said, I do the radio program, which is on www.crusaderadio.com, and it's aired live on Tuesdays, 5 o'clock Mountain Daylight Time, and it's an hour long. It's called American Intelligence Briefing Hour, and it's basically it's based on my daily newsletter that I put out called the American Intelligence Briefing, which I just have little snippets of articles. I go through about 350 emails a day looking for articles of interest. 85-90% of what is in the American Intelligence Briefing report is not, you don't hear it on, you don't even hear it on Fox. I guarantee you don't hear 99% of it on any of the MSMs. I also write a column, a weekly column for newswithviews.com. I've been doing that for about 3 years or so. And I've written two books on America's Christian history. Bring America Back to Her Religious Roots was the first one that I did. And that one, if you're a good reader, you can probably get through that one in about 3 hours. My latest one, Defining America's Exceptionalism, is a little different. I've got 48 pages of footnotes in that particular book. Every fact, figure, comment, whatever, is documented. So, you know, it's very hard to refute any of the information that's in there. And the reason I put that book together in that manner, I believe I heard you talking about, you know, nobody's being taught this stuff anymore. Nobody's really being taught America's history. And it's actually illegal in the United States of America to teach American history. And the reason for that is there is so much religion, and by that I mean Christianity, involved with our founders, and we have this so-called separation of church and state, which for some reason didn't happen until 1947 when the Supreme Court in the Everson versus the Board of Education decided that they understood the First Amendment better than the people who wrote the First Amendment, and literally turned the meaning of the First Amendment 180 degrees. And they used the phrase out of Thomas Jefferson's letter in 1801 to the Danbury Baptist Association, and they only used those nine words, separation of church and state,
right,
out of that entire letter. And by the way, that was the only case from the Supreme Court that I have been able to find where they, in issuing their decision, they didn't give reference to precedents. Literally in every other case up to that point, when they would issue an opinion, and just for your listeners' sake, they aren't decisions, they're opinions. Anytime a court makes decides on a case, you always hear them say it is the opinion of the court. They always give a precedence. Well, you know, in this case, you know, this was decided. In this case, this was decided. In this case, this was decided. So that's why we decided this way in this case. Well, in the Everson versus the Board of Education in 1947, the Supreme Court cited no precedences whatsoever at all. And they used a personal document, which was that letter from Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Baptist Association, as a legal constitutional document. But they only used that phrase out of that document, because when you read that whole document, and I explain this in the book, Thomas Jefferson is calling for a separation of church and state, but it's what is called an institutional separation, which means the government has nothing to do with the operations of the church. According to Thomas Jefferson, and the courts even made the comment that this is what Thomas Jefferson meant when he wrote the First Amendment. Thomas Jefferson didn't write the First Amendment. He was an ambassador to France when that amendment was written, and it was already written and ratified before he even saw it. And the gentleman that wrote the First Amendment, his name is Fisher Ames, and they've been using the First Amendment to keep the Bible out of schools and out of the public arena, and no prayers in school and all this kind of stuff. But Fisher Ames at one point actually called for the Bible to be the main school book again, which means it was prior to, from about 1620 on, the Bible was the primary teaching tool in most of the schools, until they started using a little book called the New England Primer, which most of our founders, if not all of our founders, that was the other book that was in school at the time. But all of the teachings in it, they taught you how to read using Bible scriptures. They taught you math out of Bible scriptures. They taught everything that's in that book has been taken out of the Bible. And I have a copy of that book. You can still get a copy of it. But it's the history of this nation is just no longer being taught. My kids were not taught that Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. They know it only because I taught it to them. And I was getting very discouraged about the fact that the real history of America is not being taught anymore. And I find it very discouraging that our schools will not teach it. And also, it's to the point where when you see the curriculum that's in school, you can't have a picture of Jesus Christ hanging in a school. But with the new C-Scope and the Common Core teaching programs that are out there, we are, their students in Texas have been, the girls have been required. It wasn't a voluntary thing. You can if you want, and you don't have to if you don't want to. It was mandatory. They had to wear burqas. They had to take on a Muslim name. They had to learn verses out of the Quran. But you can't have a picture of Jesus Christ hanging in the school because of separation of church and state. But they're teaching, they're actually indoctrinating our students into Islam because they're teaching a culture, they say. Now, this has happened in California. It's happened in Texas. And there's no pride in America being taught in our schools anymore. I grew up in the 50s. We said the Pledge of Allegiance before classes every day. We also had this is like a 21-word prayer that was said every day. And all students participated. If you didn't participate, the students would give you a hard time. Not the teacher, but the students would give you a hard time. In Texas this year, in Arizona last year, students taking Spanish classes, both the students were of Spanish heritage, were required to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the Mexican flag. Not Old Glory, but to the Mexican flag. One student in Texas, one student in Arizona said, no, I don't say the Pledge of Allegiance to a foreign flag. Now, I'll say the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag in Spanish, but not the Spanish flag, or not the Mexican flag. Both students were suspended from class for refusing to say a Pledge of Allegiance to a foreign flag. Now, in both of those schools, it's not required to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag, but it was required to say the Pledge of Allegiance to a Mexican flag. We have to this book gives a detailed foundation on how this nation was founded, what they used for that foundation, which was literally the Word of God, the principles of God, the precepts of God, how they developed our constitutions, which they got straight out of Scripture. I discuss the founders themselves. I don't discuss all of them because we designated 235 people as the key founders from that era, but I discuss, the main ones. I discuss their personal writings, how they communicated in between each other, and when you see that, it's all biblically based. I discuss how our judicial system was designed, how it initially ran, just to give you a couple quick things for our judicial system. One of the original judges that was on the Supreme Court, in one of the cases that he did, he a man was brought up, and I think he was up for a murder charge. He was found guilty, and back in that day, you had 5, maybe 7 days before you were put to death, instead of the 20 years that you have nowadays. And the judge sat there and preached that man a salvation sermon and did an altar call for him. That's how our judicial system was founded. 5 years ago in the state of Colorado, a 26-year-old man beat an 82-year-old woman to death trying to steal her purse. He was caught. He was found guilty, but the prosecuting attorney said 7 words out of the Bible, and the case was thrown out of court, overturned, and the man walked. That's how far we have come in this nation, in our judicial system. Everybody knows that when you're in a courtroom and the judge walks in, the sergeant at arms tells everybody, all rise. Well, everybody stands up, judge comes in, sits down, then everybody sits down. But nobody knows why you stand up. The reason you stand up is because the judge is supposed to walk into that room carrying a Bible, and you stand in reference to the Word of God. Up until about 1910, 1915, if you wanted to be an attorney in the United States of America, you had to go to law school, but you also had to go through 4 years of seminary. And that's because our founders believed that if you're going to judge man, you have to know how God judges man. And I haven't talked to a single attorney in the last 5 years that is aware of that fact. I had no idea.
Yeah,
this is the history of America. Go ahead, sir.
There is a lot of history that people just don't know. Well,
yeah.
I don't know if you heard the sound clip that I played just before you came on. I'll play it again for you, and I want to get your thoughts on Harry Reid and his statement about government being inherently good. And to top it off, he says, and that's why we have a Constitution. So let me play it here for you real quickly, and you clearly have a good understanding and well-read on our founders and our history. And I'll bring some Thomas Jefferson quotes into this, but I want to get your thoughts on it. It's about 30 seconds.
But they are doing everything they can to throw a monkey wrench into any form of government.
Talking about Tea
whether
Party.
It's local, whether it's state or federal government. That's what it's all about.
Trouble speaking too.
And so anything they can do to throw a monkey wrench in the wheels of government, they're happy doing that. And I'm sorry to say my friend from Oklahoma is helping them, maybe not directly, but indirectly, and that's wrong. Government is not inherently bad. Government is inherently good. That's why we have a Constitution. Government is inherently good. Government is inherently good.
So Harry Reid contends that government is inherently good, and that's why we have a Constitution. What do you think about that, Pastor?
Well, knowing what I know concerning the why we have the Constitution that we have, and understanding the at least partially the mentality and the thought process behind the people who put it together, their thoughts were government is inherently bad. That's why we have a Constitution.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
Yeah, and that's because we need to. I mean, how many times has Barack Obama said that the Constitution is more of something that, you know, that the government can't do than what it can do? Well, there's a purpose for that. They only wanted the government to be able to go so far, and that's it. Because the larger the government, and Thomas Jefferson even stated that the larger the government, the worse of a situation that you have.
Yeah.
The more
yeah.
apt you are to go down the road of tyranny.
Yeah.
So,
well, I have that quote if you want to hear it, Obama on the Constitution, because
sure.
this is one of my big things, and I'll tell you what. He doesn't. He's Mr. Everybody thinks he's a constitutional law professor. Actually, he's a lawyer, and he taught one aspect of the 14th Amendment. And he didn't teach it. He lectured on it. So he's not a constitutional law professor. But here's what he had to say on the Constitution. And a lot of people don't understand about positive and negative rights in the Constitution. I'll explain it. But Obama doesn't understand it himself. He makes it clear when he makes the statement.
To that extent, as radical as I think people try to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution, at least as it's been interpreted, and Warren Court interpreted it in the same way, that generally the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf.
Okay, so just to pick that apart, and then I'll let you jump in there, Pastor. First of all, the Constitution is not a charter of negative liberties. A negative liberty is a liberty that isn't written down. In other words, does the Constitution say that you can or can't fish on Sunday? No, it doesn't talk about it. So the understanding is you can fish on Sunday because it doesn't say anything about it. That's what a negative liberty. A negative liberty is not bad. I mean, liberty can never be bad. But a negative liberty is it's not spoken, it's not written down. So to say the Constitution's full of negative liberties, then they would all be positive liberties if they were written down. So he doesn't even understand Constitution 101. Second of all, the Constitution, for the most part, doesn't tell us what the states can't do to us and the federal government can't do to us. It has a couple instances where it prohibits the states from certain things that the federal government will do, but the Constitution is two parts. It lays out the construction of our government, how it's put together, and number two, it gives the federal government enumerated powers, which are specific powers. So it doesn't. The Constitution doesn't go through article this and article that saying here's what the government can't do to you. It says what the government can do and nothing more. So he gets his whole analysis right there in that 30s, well, the last 15 seconds of the Constitution is completely wrong. So he either doesn't understand the Constitution and constitutional law, or he's lying and he does understand it, but he wants people to think of something else.
I believe your last statement is what it is. I believe he understands. Barack Obama appears to be very ignorant in some things, but it only appears to be. The man is one of the most manipulative men I have ever seen, and he knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows exactly how he's doing it. He just doesn't tell anybody how he's doing it. The man, for ever since I have been paying any attention to him, you don't pay attention to what that man does or says. You pay attention to what that man does. And I'll give you some examples. In 2008, when he was running for president, he said, "I support marriage as being between one man and one woman." That's what he said. He opposed Proposition 8 in California. And now, comes out just before the election, he supports gay marriage. Okay? He said, "I don't support infanticide," but he voted for it three times while he was a senator in Illinois. And he was the only person that debated it on the Senate floor. And so he says one thing, but he does something else. And about 98% of the time, if what he says, he's going to do the opposite. And he's proven that. The 5 years or 4 years he's been in office. He understands that Constitution. And it is not, it doesn't tell the states what it can do. Well, that's all it does. This is all you can do. The rest of it is in the power of the people or the power of the states. And he doesn't like that. He wants the power in his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, now, there we have, I just happen to have that clip, so I wanted to play it. But back to Harry Reid, who says the government is inherently good. He made that statement on the floor of the U.S. Senate. I'm going to read a few quotes from Thomas Jefferson, and let's see if we can figure out what Jefferson thought about government, as he makes it pretty clear. We don't have to think. We don't have to figure it out. First quote, my reading of history convinces me that most bad government results from too much government. So he's talking about bad government, and it occurs when there's too much government. We know we've got way too much government right now, so that must mean we've got bad government. But Harry Reid says it's inherently good. Wow, that doesn't jive with what Jefferson said. Okay, next one. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. So does that sound like an inherently good government that has to be, that could be feared by people, or that must fear the people themselves? Absolutely not. Now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. He said in a letter, one of his letters to a friend, and I'm not going to read the whole quote, but it boils down to this. Bind down those whom we are obliged to trust with power. Well, who's he talking about? He's talking about our elected government officials. And that was earlier in the paragraph. Again, I'm not going to read the whole thing because it jumps around a little bit. But bind down those whom we are obliged to trust with power. That would be our government. So we need to bind them down. And then he goes on, in questions of power, then, let no more be heard of confidence in man, in other words, those that are in power, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. So Harry Reid says we have a Constitution because government's inherently good, and Jefferson just said we have a Constitution to bind down government because it's inherently bad.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I think Harry Reid really needs to bone up on his American history, or in fact, what really Harry Reid is doing, he knows this. He's trying to rewrite history. He's trying to get the low-information voter, the uninformed masses, to believe something that just absolutely isn't true. Now, I got two more quotes of Jefferson because I love Jefferson. To establish Republican government, it is necessary to effect a constitution in which the will of the nation shall have an organized control over the actions of its government and its citizens a regular protection against its oppressions. Wow, he's not making government sound inherently good there. No. Now, I found another quote that doesn't quite go in line with this, but it goes in line with what we're seeing go on today. He said, the spirit of times may alter. In fact, they will alter. Our rulers will become corrupt, our people careless. Well, I look around me, everywhere around me, and I see careless people, and I see corrupt rulers or corrupt politicians. And Jefferson predicted it because that's just the way things tend to go over time.
Well, Tom, look at this, and this is something I brought it up several times on my radio program. I put it in my intelligence report. Congress has a 9% approval rating, and we returned 90% of Congress to D.C. Now, what's up with that? We have become so apathetic. In this nation, we look for a D or we look for an R when we're in the ballot box, when we're in the voting booth, and that's how we vote. We don't vet anybody anymore. We don't pay attention to what a politician does while he's in office. Do we need to replace most of who we have in D.C.? I'd say yes. The NDAA vote this year, 98 members of the Senate voted for the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act. Now, that has an amendment attached to it that gives the federal government the right to indefinitely detain a U.S. citizen without access to an attorney and without ever charging him with anything. Now, that's a violation of our first, our third, our fourth, our fifth, our seventh, our eighth, amendments and four clauses in our Constitution. Okay? 98 members of the Senate voted for that.
Yeah.
That is such a blatant violation. That is such a blatant violation of our Constitution, and they voted for it. And we put them all back in there.
We have two things going on here, Pastor. Two things going on. Number one, we have some members that just aren't very smart. I mean, you watch them talk, and you know they're not smart. They're not sly like Obama. They just really are stupid. Like Joe Biden, he's just an idiot. He's just a complete moron. He's the dumbest U.S. senator we've ever had, and he's clearly the dumbest vice president we've ever actually had in the history of our nation.
You speak very highly of him.
Many of them are lawyers and smart enough to know the difference. I got to view a letter that was sent to a friend of mine. He's a retired police officer. And he questioned that National Defense Authorization Act. And Rubio, and this was fairly, you know, he hadn't been, you know, in the limelight much and fairly unknown, sent him a letter saying, oh, no, believe me, there's nothing that violates the Constitution in that. Let me tell people how they get around this and how they can say that U.S. citizens are exempt from that indefinite detaining. What it says is that the military has the authority to indefinitely detain foreigners, either found in the U.S. or abroad, engaged in terror against the U.S. and plotting terror, etc. It says something along the lines of, well, no, it says exactly this. It says, and I don't have it here in front of me, but off the top of my head, I remember pretty well, that the military must detain them. The military has no choice. But the military is not required to detain the citizens. So what these politicians, these slimy politicians like Marco Rubio are doing, are saying, oh, no, U.S. citizens can't be detained. No, it doesn't say that. It just says that the military is not required to detain them, but the military can. The military can. And another part of that bill that most people don't know, understand, and you've got to do some digging in it, it's in another section that follows that particular section of the bill. It gives the president the authority under a other bill, and it names the bill, and you have to go look at that bill. That bill was the bill that Congress and the Senate unanimously passed after 9/11 to allow George Bush to go after Al-Qaeda and use all means necessary. In other words, he could do anything he wanted to go after specifically Al-Qaeda. But the new Defense Authorization Act gives the president authority to go after any group he deems to be a similar threat. So it's not Al-Qaeda anymore. It could be Tea Partiers. It could be airline pilots. It could be bakers. If the president deems it, and the only requirement that the president needs to meet to go after a new terrorist group that he deems as dangerous as Al-Qaeda is for his Secretary of Defense to notify Congress. That's all he's got to do. And that is a blanket, open invitation for the president to do anything he wants, anything that violates the Constitution, anything that violates law, violates international law, anything. If he believes there's a group that's as bad as Al-Qaeda, and we know that this president can rationalize his way through anything, so he can go after anybody, really, pretty much with impunity, and only has to notify Congress. That's it. So that is a bad, bad piece of legislation, and all of those senators that voted for it, Democrat and Republican, should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. And when they try to rationalize it away or assure us that it doesn't actually say that stuff, I've dug through that numerous times very, very carefully, and that's exactly what it says in it.
Well, let me give you a clue here, which you probably already have it, but when you were talking about any group that the president deems as threatening as Al-Qaeda is, do you know what the last document that came from the Department of Justice has described the top four threats to American national security? The people who believe that the federal government needs to operate solely according to the Constitution. pro-gun
people.
That's
a big threat.
Pro-life people. Veterans. Those are the top four national security threats to America, according to the Department of Justice. Now, the CIA is out doing training conferences all over the country. They're number one, violent, probable offenders that you need to be keeping your eye on? Christians. Number one. Number three, Catholics. Okay, now with the NDA stating what it states, where do we fall? We are, according to the Department of Justice, we are the biggest threat to national security, the Tea Partiers, if you will. I'm a registered Republican in the state of Colorado because in Colorado, you either have to be a Democrat or a Republican, or you cannot participate in the process until Election Day.
Yeah.
So I'm a registered Republican, but the Republicans in this state are idiots. I mean, idiots. So, go ahead.
Can I say one thing about the that Department of Justice memo? It's half right. It's half right. Those are serious threats. Those groups are serious threats. They're serious threats to Marxist socialist Democrats, not America.
Right.
To the Marxist socialist, godless, lawless left. That's who the threat is. They think they're America. They, the godless, lawless left, think they're America. They're not. They're the godless left. They are trying to transform America into something that it isn't and never was intended to be and doesn't want to be. They're trying to transform it. So that report is part correct, that we are a big threat, but not to America. We're a threat to them, and that is something that America needs today.
You've got that, and I'm proud to be a threat. I really am. Because I can't have a heart for what they are trying to do to this nation. When I'm speaking and discussing some of our American history, there are parts of our history concerning, let's say, George Washington. There's a story about George Washington that I am so emotional about this nation, and because I've studied how God put this nation together, and to see what happened to George Washington in his life from the time he was 17 years old until the time he was president of the United States, and the events that came down in his life. There's only one thing you can say. There is a God, and he directed the founding of this nation. And to see what's happening to this nation today, it just tears me up. And there's one little story about George Washington and a battle that he fought when he was an officer in the British Army. As a young man, and this was way before the revolution, I can't get through that, telling that story, just simply because God is so present in that man's life and in the founding of this nation, and to allow the people that we have in office to remain in office and to continue to do what they're doing to this nation is unfathomable to me. It's just, you know, how do we do this? Why are we allowing this to continue to happen?
Yeah.
It just tears me up.
Yeah, it's the complacency of the American people. Things have to get really bad for people to feel like they need to change. You know, in the business world, we find many, many companies that are failing, and yet they can't make the necessary changes until they're faced with actually shutting the doors. Most times, they can't make the necessary changes, and then they either don't and they fail, or then they do make the changes and it may be too late. But that's very typical of human nature. The other thing that I would say about human nature, and Benjamin Franklin said this, is that the natural inclination of mankind is a kingly government. Okay, and he explained why that is. He said, because it gives the illusion of creating equality among the masses. It gives the illusion. And so we have a government today that is creating an illusion, a redistribution of wealth and making things fair. We hear that word fair share all the time. It's all a massive illusion that is tricking the American people. And unfortunately, we have a media that is so highly biased that it's very hard to counter. And so when people say that they don't like the Citizens United ruling that give super PACs and corporations the ability to go out and make some political statements, well, how in the heck, how in the world are we ever going to counter the billion-dollar multimedia media that's always putting lies out there? In fact, I've got a good example of a lie, or I called it not a lie at the beginning of this top of the hour, but I called it hypocrisy. I'm sure you're familiar with Chris Matthews. And
yes.
I never watch his show because he slobbers and spittles on himself way too much. I can't stand watching him. But I know what he said right after the and a lot of people know this, but I want people to hear this. I want people to hear this, what he said right after the Boston bombing. He tried to pin this on right-wingers and talk about right-wingers. And then when it turns out it was Muslims, suddenly he doesn't care who they are or what their background is and what their motivation was. But so I'm going to play the clip, and I just want people to focus in on the sentence where he says, I mean, there's a couple things to focus in on, but the right-winger part. But he says, do they just hate America so much, or its politics, or its government, that they just want to do damage? So he's asking a question of somebody else there that he's talking with. Do they just hate America so much, or its politics, or its government? So he's, I mean, doesn't that sound like Pastor? He's trying to analyze, who are these guys? What are they about? What was their motivation? What's behind them? Doesn't that sound like that to you, kind of, with that question he's asking?
To me it does, yes.
Yeah. So let's take a look, or let's take a listen at what he said, and when he said that, and then what he said a few days later. Absolute hypocrisy. Here we go.
Let me ask you about domestic terrorism as a category. Normally, domestic terrorist people tend to be on the far right, although that's not a good category, just extremists, let's call them that. Do they advertise after they do something like this? Do they try to get credit as a group, or they just hate America so much, or its politics, or its government, that they just want to do the damage? They don't care if they get public credit, if you will. Domestic terrorist people tend to be on the far right. Domestic terrorist people tend to be on the far right.
Okay, I went through the show, and I'm not going to do it again today. I went through the show yesterday and listed a vast majority of what's considered terrorist and terrorism in the U.S. since 1990. And they all had Muslim names. There were a few gringos in there, but they all had Muslim names. So I don't know where these guys get their facts. Well, see, this is it. The media can distort history and lie to the American people. He made a statement right there that domestic terrorists tend to be to the far right, which is absolutely not true. I proved that yesterday by reading down that list of terrorists. Now, a few days later, when we know the truth, and he had Clint Van Zandt, an FBI profiler, on the show, Clint was talking about, well, there are things that we need to figure out about these guys. You know, we know what they did and how they did it, but now what we need to find out, and you're going to hear his little part in this, the pieces we don't have, Chris, are what was their inspiration? Where did they get their guidance? You know, so the question is, who are they? What are they about? So we can figure them out and maybe, you know, obviously you know where this is going, piece together, was there anybody else involved, and how did this all really come about? We know the details of how it ultimately happened now, but we need to know who they are. That's the really essentially what Chris Matthews was getting at a few days earlier when he was asking about who are these guys? You know, how do they hate politics and the government, and are they gonna somebody gonna claim credit for this? And what who are they? What are they about? So that's what he was. Now Listen to Chris Matthews' response now that we know who they are. And I'm going to pose this question before we play this. Why is it that the criminal, godless left embrace Islam so openly? Why is it that they want to protect it so much and, as you said, teach the culture to our kids in schools while banning Christianity and any discussion about Christianity from public discourse? Why would they want to embrace it so much? And I have my own answer to that, and I'm sure you do as well, Pastor. But let's listen to this and watch how this guy will now carry the water for Islamic terrorists.
Let me ask you about domestic terrorism as a category. Normally, do domestic terrorism...
Okay, we had a little audio issue there. I played the wrong one.
Their inspiration. Where did they get the guidance?
Yeah.
Who taught them how to build the bombs? Where did they
why
build them?
Why is that important? Why is that important to prosecute? Is that important to prosecuting? I mean, what difference does it make why they did it if they did it? I'm being tough here, but I don't know whether when you look at this evidence.
No.
What difference does it make why they did it if they did it? What difference does it make why they did it if they did it?
Now, a few days earlier, he really wanted to know why they did it and who was behind it. Now, suddenly, that we know they're Muslim extremists, nah, we don't need to know anything. What difference does it make? Why does the media and the criminal left carry the water for extreme Islamists?
You know, it still baffles me why they do that. And the thing is, they don't seem to understand that at some point in time, if they don't put a stop to the power that is being given and the freedoms that's being given to these guys, that they're going to end up, as they say in the movie industry, on the cutting room floor. And once you keep, especially the women, look how Hillary Clinton sides with the Muslims. It's just unbelievable. But in a fully Muslim society, she's a piece of property.
Right.
And she can't see that.
I'll tell you my theory, Pastor. Here's my theory. And you know, we've seen this happen over the centuries where two groups that don't really like each other a whole lot band together under a common cause. What sorts out, what shakes out in the end, each side thinks they'll have a little bit more of an edge and authority in the end, and they'll be okay. But they don't care right now. It's sort of a lift for today, for tomorrow never comes. But here's what it boils down to. There's only one religion, one major religion on the face of the earth that hates the West, that hates Western society, that hates modern society, that hates a free society. There's only one. And it's Islam.
Right.
And who else hates this modern society and liberty and freedom? The left, the criminal left. That's why they embrace Islam, because it's the one religion that goes along with what they feel about Western society. And that we are all criminals because of the way our nation was founded and having had slavery and on and on. The criminal left embrace Islam. They're not going to go join up and become Muslims. But they embrace it because it hates the same people that they hate. It hates our Constitution. It hates our freedom and liberty.
Any enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
I think that's the Mid-Eastern mentality. Any enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Well, now, Pastor, go back to your book, Bring America Back to Her Religious Roots. Tell us what inspired you to write that, and really just what is the bottom line on that book? If somebody goes out to buy it, what is it they're getting?
Well, the reason I wrote that book was because our history was not being taught to anybody. Not our true history. There's a history that's being taught out there, but it's not really the history, the true history of America. So, and I believe God gave me that book. I mean, He just put it on my heart to write that book. I was able to put it together in about 3.5 months. And there was some serious research that was done with that thing. And I'm also working with some homeschool curriculum suppliers right now that are thinking about using that book as a either history or civics course. I'm putting together a student workbook and a teacher workbook for it, you know, to make it easy to do that. But we don't have anybody that is teaching what really happened in America in 1776. This book covers from about 1620 up to, and it talks a lot about modern history, but it's just in comparison to, well, this is what the courts used to do, this is what they do now, this is what the schools used to do, this is what they do now, you know, that type of thing. It's a comparison.
Yeah.
And when you get this book, you will learn what made America exceptional. And there's never been a nation on this earth that has been as powerful, as prosperous, as the United States. And there's only one reason for it. There's only one reason for it, and that's because our founders not only established the United States on the Word of God, but they lived their everyday life according to the Word of God. And it's in their writings. They ran their personal lives that way. They ran their business lives that way. And they ran the government that way. And contrary to what, you know, anybody in modern, you know, the LA Times ran an article that said all of the founding fathers were either atheists or agnostics. Christianity was just kind of an afterthought and had no influence on our founders in any way, shape, or form. 56 signers of the Constitution and 23 of them had seminary degrees. Why don't they report that? Because that does not meet their criteria and does not teach what they want taught. And that's what we're seeing. We are seeing so-called educational system that teaches what it wants taught, whether it's the truth or not. And that I find absolutely despicable. And I've talked to teachers, good teachers, that are in the system, but they won't buck the system because that's their daily paycheck. And I somewhat sort of understand that mentality, but what's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. And if you embrace wrong, that's a seed you're sowing. I heard a preacher say one time that, okay, you voted for somebody because of your pocketbook, but God wanted somebody else in that particular office. But you voted because of pocketbook. What that man does, the people that voted for Barack Obama are going to suffer the consequences of what Barack Obama does. He is the most ungodly man that we have ever had sit in that office, with the homosexuality, with the abortions, and everything else. And the judgment that comes on him because of what he does is going to come on the people that voted for him. Democrat, Republican, Christian, or atheist, doesn't make any difference.
Yep.
And
well,
so that's my thought on that.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a great book, and it's exactly what people need to read to find out the difference between how things were, because you can read lots of books about history, and you'll start to see those differences, but to have somebody go through and specifically pick those differences out, how did things work back then? What were people's beliefs back then? That's awesome. And so bring back Bring America Back to Her Religious Roots, written by Pastor Roger Angus, and I guess you got another book that will be coming out later on, Discovering America's Christian Heritage, probably along the same lines as that one.
One's going to be along that same line. Yeah, all of these books deal with our Christian heritage, and because I state in that book, if we forget where we came from, we won't know where we're going.
Oh yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And we have forgot who we are.
Yeah.
We have literally forgotten who we are, because we don't know who we are, you know, you get in your car, where are you going? I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. I always say this. If you, that was a great analogy. If I tell somebody you need to drive to Walmart, okay, but where am I? I don't know which way to go to get to Walmart. You know where Walmart is, but you don't know where you're starting. Which direction do you head? You can't get there. You may know you want to get to Walmart, but you can't get there because you don't know which direction to go because you don't know where you're at right now. And that's a very, very good analogy about we've got to go back to our roots and find out where we came from to understand where we need to go to get to those things we want.
Well, it's America is at a strategic inflection point. We're going to go one way or we're going to go another. Ronald Reagan stated that, you know, we're one generation away from losing the American experience.
Yeah.
And if we don't pay attention to what we're doing, and we're not paying a whole lot of attention to what we're doing, we're going to lose this experiment. And once it's lost, we'll never get it back.
Right.
We'll never get it back.
It'll be very difficult.
Yeah, we all know what's going on with the, Bible, end times, last days, one world government. We are going in that direction. And the world will eventually end up there because the Bible says it's going to. But I don't think that's going to happen until the church has been taken out of the scene. But we still have to continue to fight. Bible says to occupy until I come, which means we have to continue the fight. And it's a fight for our faith. It's a fight for our rights. It's a fight for the privileges that our founders gave us. And if we don't continue we need to put our foot down and say, you ain't taking no more from us. They just passed that CISPA, that cyber security bill. And, you know, the Republican-controlled House passed this. Well, that particular bill destroyed the Fourth Amendment, absolutely shredded it, because that gives 22 government agencies free access to our emails, our tweets, our Facebook posts, and everywhere we go on the Internet are no longer private. They haven't been for a long time. Secretly, they have been watching everything that we do and logging every email that we send. Email is nothing but digital paper. And our founders said that we had the right to privacy of our own papers. And this bill that was just passed destroyed that, absolutely destroyed it.
Well, that's definitely something we're going to need to get into on another show and pick that legislation apart and see what they've done to us. But listen, thanks so much for coming on the show, Pastor. We really enjoyed it. Pastor Roger Angus and, of course, your new book, Bring America Back to Religious Roots. And your website is restorefreespeech.org. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. It was an honor to be on your program, sir.
All right. Take care, Pastor. And just so everybody knows, he does do a radio show. Go to his website, restorefreespeech.org. You can listen to some different interviews he's done and find out when he's going to be doing his next radio show. But we have a special guest that just joined us. Unexpected. And I'm very glad that she called in, because this is our good friend and former co-host of the American Hour, Paula Luzon. How are you doing today, Paula?
I'm doing well, Tom. How are you doing? Long time no hear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess things have been pretty exciting up there in Boston the last week and a half, huh?
Yeah, but we're still Boston strong. That's how we roll.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It was a great town. When I used to fly out of there back in the late 90s, it was a great place to be and lots of great people, and really enjoyed it. I just couldn't take the weather.
No, yes.
I would have stayed up there, but I just couldn't take the cold anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I do have to say that everybody is still, I guess, in a bit of shock. And, you know, I work from home, as you know, and I don't have the television on during the day. So I was working through the day, but my iPad just kept bouncing around with alerts. And I walked over to it because I keep it, you know, separate from where I'm sitting. And the Washington Post was the first thing that gave. And I immediately got, you know, turned on the television. And I was completely shocked. Completely shocked. And I have to tell you, I live about 10 to 15 minutes south of Boston. And for that whole entire week, it was eerily quiet in this area, except for the sirens and the helicopters. There was no flights coming in and out of, you know, this side of the city that we were on. I'm thinking that maybe, you know, everything was diverted to the other side of the city, but other than that, it was very quiet and just, you know, sitting on the edge of the seat wondering when these individuals were going to get caught. And, you know, as the events unfolded throughout the week, you know, the fact that the second individual was caught after his brother was killed, it's just, I think it's slightly mind-numbing, to say the least.
Yeah. Now, what's the biggest topic of discussion around where you live from folks? Is it this guy, we're going to find information out of him, or that he was a jihadist, or that I know what would be a topic of discussion around here. I know people would be asking me where I buy my ammo and where's
right.
a good place
and,
to buy
you
guns.
Know, for all intents and purposes, I'm not hearing, you know, what so much as to what the background was, but what was the intention, what was the role. I mean, the mother is just, you know, to jump on a different subject really quick, their mother is, you know, she's resolute in her belief that her sons were not involved in this attack and the whole thing was fake. And, you know, the father is flying out now to see the son as it is. He's on his way to this country to see the son, was one of the last reports that were given. But I think, if I'm understanding it correctly from what I'm reading in the reports, is that people want to put it behind us. They just want to put it behind them and just keep moving forward. But my feeling is that we let our guard down, because in talking to someone else recently in New York City, when things or events are held, you know, specifically the marathon in New York City, there are check-in and check-out points. There's one way in and one way out. Why wasn't that done here in Boston? Why did we let our guard down? We, you know, that's what, you know, when these individuals do these things, that's what they're waiting for, is just, you know, everybody's going along doing their own thing, thinking everything is okay, and it really isn't. And it's sad that the society has come to the way it has, in that we have to look over our shoulder, so to speak, and be 5 to 10 steps ahead of what, you know, might happen or will happen, for that matter, you know. And yeah, the fact that it happened on Patriots Day, I mean, I can recall up until last year, you know, working, whether or not we were working the day or not, it was, oh, it's the Boston Marathon. Let's watch them leave from Hopkinton and let's watch them end up, you know, in Boston on the television. That was a highlight. And to actually turn on the television and watch those events unfold in those matter of seconds that they did, it was a complete shock. It was not expected by anybody. And, you know, the fact that they probably had the dogs come in, sniff, and then, you know, leave, or whatever the case may have been, we let our guard down. And that shouldn't have been. And it's unfortunate we have to keep our guard up on a going forward basis.
Yeah. I think where, you know, you can trace this back to our government agencies that are supposed to, we pay a lot of money for them to protect us, and this guy, the older brother, was a known terrorist, and they didn't do anything about it. They didn't,
well, he
they didn't
was on a low list. He was on a low list last I heard this morning. He was on the very bottom of the list. They didn't put him, like, in a middle priority or in a high priority. They had him at the bottom of the list. But, yes, they should have picked him out and, you know, I think did a little bit of searching to say, you know, what's he been doing? You know, where's he been going? Where's he been hanging out? The guy didn't have a job. He was funding what he was doing by selling drugs.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So that should have been a flag right there.
Right. Well, the government looked at him and just looked at him on the surface. Just, okay, they interview him, they talk to him. If they had done any digging at all, they would have found out that his last name matches a whole host of prominent Al-Qaeda members.
Right.
A whole handful of them are down in Guantanamo right now. And then all you had to do was go on YouTube and see what, you know, I mean, go to social media. If you're investigating a guy for potential terrorism, first of all, the real tip-off was Russia. Russia, the government of Russia, called our government repeatedly warning about him. Hey, you need to check into this guy. Hey, you better take a look at this guy. So what would be a really simple thing to do when I want to know about somebody and find out more about him? I go to their Facebook page. They got a YouTube page. I go to that. On his YouTube page, he had all kinds of jihadist propaganda and videos there. So our FBI dropped the ball big time, big time.
Yep.
And then when he left the country to go back to Russia, his name on his ticket didn't match his real name, and I think he did that on purpose so that he wouldn't send off any flags. But when he did leave, so the TSA didn't notice the mismatch in names, which is what they're supposed to be looking for, and then the FBI didn't notice he was going to Russia till he was gone, and that sent off some flags that, hey, this guy, he just flew off to Russia. That's a bad sign right now. Okay, what are we going to do about it? 6 months later, we forgot about it. We didn't pay any attention. So he's able to fly right back into the country with all of these red flags. So our government has failed, and I lay this squarely on this administration and this president. His most important job is the safety of this nation, and he has failed. He has failed. I saw a list, a tweet yesterday. I think that's what it was. After 9/11, how many domestic terrorists achieved their goal during the rest of George Bush's two terms? Zero. How many domestic terrorists have achieved their goals by killing people under Obama in the last 5 years? Five. So he's an utter failure when it comes to national security, an utter, absolute failure. And
there was talk as to why, you know, the Saudi national that's in the at Mass General, if I got the place correct, or he could be in one of the other hospitals. I don't even know if he's still in the hospital. There had been talk in as to why, you know, the First Lady had gone to see him specifically and no one else in that hospital.
Yeah.
She didn't go check on a bombing victim. She didn't go check on, you know, the families that were waiting. She went specifically to see him.
Yeah, and so the actual deportation letter for him is engaged in terrorism. But they're telling us, oh, no, he had nothing to do with the bombing. Oh, no, he had nothing to do with the Bomber Brothers. Oh, he had nothing. But and I got my facts a little mixed up. He's the one that's got all the prominent family members that are members of Al-Qaeda. Not the Chechen brother, the older brother, but he had some unique ties within his own family, but not like this guy. This guy was directly tied to Al-Qaeda, and we're being told, this guy to make you really suspect. First we're told he's a suspect. Then we're told, oh, no, he's a witness. Then we're told, no, he's not even a witness. He's nobody. He's nothing. He has nothing to do with any of this. And yet he's being deported. The official deportation order says engaged in terrorism. So if he's not engaged in terrorism like we're being told, then how can you deport him for engaging in terrorism? That's unlawful. I mean, what would? And second of all, why would we deport him? We need to find out who this guy is and who he's working with and what's been going on. You know, it has not been highly reported. I've only seen it in one news report that he got into the country on a student visa to go to a school in Ohio. But he's got an apartment in Boston. It's kind of hard to attend school in Ohio when you have an apartment and live in Boston. So it's extremely
The younger kid was going to, UMass Dartmouth right up until Wednesday, 2 days after the bombing occurred.
Uh-huh. So his visa was inaccurate. That's a violation right there. And he's in Boston. Now, he may have transferred schools there or some such other thing, but it's just all extremely fishy. And then we got meetings with Saudi officials. And so people expect the worst, suspect the worst, and the worst would be that this guy was somehow involved in that or something else and is very dangerous, and we're trying to – this administration – I mean, think about it. We just had the bombing incident on their watch, and it's an embarrassment because it was a dropping of the ball on the part of this administration and its law enforcement bureaucracies at the federal level. And then to find out that we've got some other bad guy here that may have been engaging in some really bad stuff or about to makes him look really bad. So that's why I think they're saying, oh, no, he's got nothing to do with anything. I don't know that he's got anything to do with the bombing, but I think the bombing got in his way. I think he probably had something else plotted and planning and working with other folks, and so they're trying to sweep this all under the rug. And so we need to find out who was this guy really working with, what was he doing, if you're deporting him on engaging in terrorism. And this administration won't say. They just won't say. They won't talk about it. So it's very disturbing, very, very disturbing.
It's all hush-hush.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Paula, you're welcome back on the show anytime you want. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, sir. It was good talking to you.
And we had a lot of fun in the old days when we were first broadcasting, especially when I was broadcasting from places like South America and Spain, Madrid, Spain. I remember in the beginning we were doing it 5 days a week. We're doing it Monday through Friday. I wish we had the time to do that still. But we had a lot of fun, really, really appreciate you calling in. It was a blast talking to you. Take care. Enjoy the coming summer up there in Boston. And we all love you, Paula.
Thanks. Love you guys, too. Thank you very much, Tom. Good talking with you.
Okay. Take care, Paula.
Bye-bye.
Well, as great having Paula on the show again. I just want to wrap up with the Shark Tank. We talked about the Shark Tank yesterday. Great article about Marco Rubio. And the newest article from Javier Manjarres is Rubio succumbs to conservative pressure on immigration reform. So we've been pummeling him between tweets and Facebook and articles like great articles like this on the Shark Tank. Let me just read it to you. It's a short little article. Well, it seems as if Senator Marco Rubio has succumbed to the flurry of political body blows the conservatives have landed since releasing his immigration reform bill on April 17th. Many conservatives, including myself, have been critical of the bill, citing that it lacked clarity and specifics. Rubio has tweeted, "Help us improve the immigration reform bill. Send your suggestions." Rubio is now asking for Americans to send suggestions on how to improve his flawed immigration bill. You would think that the senator and the other members of the gang of Ocho would have thought to reach out to their constituents for suggestions before introducing the bill, right? It's obvious that because Rubio realized how unclear and specificless his bill was, he had no other choice but to ask for help, but not after attacking fellow conservatives who were critiquing the bill's vague language. We reached out to the senator for comment, but could not reach him because his Marco phone was turned off. Remember, if you live along the border, you can be an illegal immigrant. Anybody that lives and works along the border, you can get a free phone, a satellite phone, no less, because there's not great coverage down there, so that you can report things if you see things. So they're calling that the Marco phone. The other thing I'd like to do is a little Spanish lesson for the day. They were called the Gang of Eight. I don't like that at all. So here's what you can call them when you refer to them. Everybody knows that Ocho is the number eight in Spanish. And a lot of people just call them the Gang of Ocho. Well, let's just say it all in Spanish, okay? Now, the word for gang in this setting would be pandilla. Pandilla. There's a double L there, so it's a more of a yes sound. And, hey, I don't have the that great Spanish accent that people that grew up speaking it have. So I say it pandilla, and some countries might even say pandilla. It just depends on which country you go to. Spanish has a lot of right. But that's like a gang, like a good gang, like a gang of friends. A gang, and this will be real easy for you to remember, a gang of bad guys, of losers, of criminals, is just simply banda. And I'll say it in a gringo way, banda, okay? But it's in Spanish, you would say it banda. And the D is more of a little bit of a dev, kind of a banda. So you want to say it in Spanish, banda de ocho. And I'll say it in a gringo way, banda de ocho. That would be the gang of eight. So you might tweet that out, kind of poke some fun at these morons for what they're trying to put forward. But and don't miss Michael Cutler tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern on this very network. He will be talking about the Banda de Ocho and his testimony to Congress and what's going on with that immigration bill and why it's so flawed. So thanks for joining us today and or downloading. We had another great show. We'll be back sometime next week. Just keep an eye on the website. You can go to usaradionetwork.com or tomgarcia.com. And, of course, our Facebook page is the American Hour Radio Show. Just look for that on Facebook if you haven't found us already. And, of course, for my tweets under Twitter, The American Hour. It's simply at The American Hour on Twitter. So thank you for joining us again, and we'll see you sometime next week. All right? Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy yourselves out there. Stay safe, and we'll keep our eyes open.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.